Today's broadcast was originally recorded on August 7th, 2024.
Thank you, Madam Vice President, for the trust you put in me, but maybe more so, thank you for bringing back the joy.
Yes, thank you.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight. I got the feeling that something ain't right. I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. Jokers to the right, here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is the Joyful Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA. Also in California, in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI and Round Mountains, KKRN. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's Queso, and Eugene's KEPW. Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU, in Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, and Rochester, New York's WRFZ, down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle, Washington on KODX, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950, KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day for your listening convenience. On the internets, on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, and most of your favorite podcast sites. Blanketing Planet Earth, I'm Brad Friedman. Your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us today. Desi Doyen, are you swell as well today?
Yes.
Are you feeling the joy? Are you feeling the joy that has
I
been brought
I'm
back?
I think I'm getting, a bit of a joy contact high from watching the Harris and Walls do such a great job in introducing him to America.
Gotcha. I will try to ruin that joy as soon as I can on today's program. Anyway, if on a different issue for the moment, if voters ran into significant problems at the polls on Tuesday, or if there have been any tabulation issues of note in the four states which held congressional and or state primaries on Tuesday in Kansas, Michigan, Missouri, and Washington State, well, I have yet to find out or hear about them. That is a good thing. If you've heard about them and think I should know, you can drop me an email. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. But hopefully that continues the good news that we've seen so far for the bulk of this primary season with few problems at the polling place. And hopefully that augurs well for November 5. But of course, a general presidential election tends to be a different beast entirely than what we've been dealing with in these mostly low-ish turnout partisan congressional and gubernatorial primaries. But the mostly smooth process in most states to date this season, happily, in addition to being good news for voters, is also good news for me and you, because I'll be able to get to my guests sooner today to discuss the electrifying addition of Minnesota Governor Tim Walz to the Democratic ticket as the vice presidential choice, along with presidential nominee Kamala Harris. Our frequent guests of late, Digby and Driftglass, will be here for that momentarily. But first, just a few of the most noteworthy available reported results from Tuesday's primaries in several of those states. In the Michigan, in the battleground state of Michigan, following Tuesday's primary, Democratic Congresswoman Alyssa Slotkin will face off against former Republican U.S. Rep. Mike Rogers this fall, with both hoping to fill the seat being vacated by Michigan's retiring, long-serving U.S. Democratic U.S. Senator Debbie Stabenow. They're both hoping to win that senatorial seat. Slotkin is said to have a big fundraising advantage for now over the Republican Rogers, who was endorsed in the primary by Donald Trump. That will either help him or hurt him in Democratic-leaning Michigan this November. No Republican has won a U.S. Senate race in Michigan since 1994. In my old home state of Missouri on Tuesday, Democratic Congresswoman Cori Bush, a member of the Progressive Squad in the U.S. House and an outspoken critic of Israel's war in Gaza, lost her primary race in the state's first congressional district to St. Louis County Prosecutor Wesley Bell following a super PAC tied to the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, or APAC, spending some $9 million in the race with attack ads against Bush and bolstering Bell. Bush's Democratic primary defeat is the second one for an African-American member of the squad this season, after both were targeted, ostensibly for their opposition to the war in Gaza. Back in June, New York Rep. Jamal Bowman was defeated by Democratic County Executive George Latimer in New York's 16th Congressional District as an APAC-tied super PAC spent some $15 million against Bowman and in favor of Latimer at the time. Bush in St. Louis on Tuesday became just the fourth member of Congress to lose a primary election this year. Her successful Democratic opponent Bell will face Republican Andrew Jones in November in the very, very Democratic-leaning first congressional district in Missouri, spanning parts of both St. Louis City and St. Louis County. In the U.S. Senate primary in Missouri, Democrat Lucas Kuntz won a four-way Democratic primary to take on incumbent Republican senator and January 6 insurrection supporter Josh Hawley this fall. And in the state's gubernatorial primaries, State Rep. Crystal Quaid was victorious on the Democratic side on Tuesday and will face off against Republican Lieutenant Governor Mike Kehoe, who defeated both Missouri's Secretary of State Jay Ashcroft. He's the son of the former U.S. Attorney General under George W. Bush, John Ashcroft. Kehoe defeated both Ashcroft and State Senator Bill Eigel. Kehoe is seen as the most moderate of those three, but, you know, Republicans in Missouri at this point, moderate is sort of a word that has little meaning anymore, it seems to me.
Moderate is relative.
The Democrat Quaid, in what may be a long shot bid, is hoping to capitalize on an abortion rights measure that could appear on Missouri's ballot this fall after the state's big government Republicans have severely restricted those freedoms, banning all abortions across the state, except in the cases of the most dire medical emergencies. As Politico reports today, as perhaps a sign of the times that might play into our upcoming discussion with Digby and Driftglass momentarily, the power of former President Donald Trump's endorsement has sort of been faltering in recent races, failing to take candidates over the finish line. So of late, he has been hedging his bets. Don't know if you noticed this, but he's been hedging his bets by issuing multiple endorsements in the same primary races.
Oh, goodness.
Because as you should know by now, his endorsements have never actually been about him supporting, you know, the particular policies or principles of any particular candidate. It's about wielding power by, you know, claiming to support a candidate that he, you know, figured out was going to win anyway, and then having something to hold over them after they do. And, of course, endorsing candidates who go on to lose, well, that makes him look like a loser, which, as you know, is the worst possible thing that Trump believes could ever happen to anybody in life. So in several primaries in the last couple of weeks, Trump has been endorsing multiple candidates in the same race so that basically if any of them win, he can take credit for that and then he can hold that over them in the future as needed. That includes in the contentious GOP primary for Missouri governor on Tuesday, where he threw his backing behind all three of the leading candidates. Lieutenant Governor Kehoe, Secretary of State Ashcroft, and State Senator Eigel. As noted, Kehoe ended up winning that race. So congratulations, Donald Trump. He did the same thing in the primary for the Missouri State AG race, where he backed both incumbent Andrew Bailey and his challenger, Will Scharf. The incumbent Bailey won. So again, congrats, Mr. Former President. In Washington State's 4th congressional district on Tuesday, Trump sought to enact revenge on Republican Congressman Dan Newhouse, one of the last two Republicans left in the U.S. House who had voted to impeach him. Trump endorsed former NASCAR driver Jared Sessler earlier this cycle, but then he tacked on an 11th-hour endorsement for Tiffany Smiley, the party's unsuccessful 2022 Senate candidate, just in case, of course, she might win or something. Sessler, one of the two Republicans that Trump endorsed, and Newhouse, the Republican who Trump is seeking revenge against, they were both on track as of Wednesday to advance to the general election under Washington's top two primary system, where all candidates from all parties run in the same primary with the top two vote getters, regardless of party, going on to the general election in November. So there will be likely two Republicans facing off in that race, one that Trump likes and one that Trump doesn't, this November. The race for the moment remains uncalled, with just 55% of the votes tallied, as Washington State takes a little bit longer to count their votes under their largely all vote-by-mail system. But as Politico observes, with Trump spreading his endorsements around to several candidates in the same race, it raises questions about the strength of his endorsement in primaries at all at this point. If he is backing all of the leading candidates or hedging his bets late in the process, is he still influencing any primary voters? Or is this just another sign of Trump's faltering political power at this point? We'll see. On Saturday this week, our friends in Hawaii will be heading to the polls for congressional primaries. And next Tuesday, it will be voters in Connecticut, the battleground state of Wisconsin, neighboring Minnesota, where voters may be in a good mood to vote all of a sudden for some reason this week, and in Vermont. Those four states will be heading to the polls for congressional and gubernatorial primary elections. If you live in one of them, and we've got a lot of listeners in Minnesota and Hawaii today, well, get out and vote if you haven't already, to make sure that all is in order and that you are registered to vote as you think you are registered to vote in advance of the nation's more critical than ever November general elections. All right, let's take a quick break here, and we will come back with the always smart, sometimes quite hilarious, Digby and Driftglass this week, who have, I suspect, probably just a few thoughts on the state of this year's remarkable presidential race following this week's edition of Minnesota Governor Tim Walz as Veep on Kamala Harris's 2024 Democratic presidential ticket. That is straight ahead on today's broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman. You will be sorry if you touch that dial. Hey, this is Brad here at the Bradcast and bradblog.com. We fight for election integrity all year around, like no other media outlet in the nation. But of course, we need your help to do it. Please stop by bradblog.com/donate to make an automated monthly pledge of any amount you like, or even just a one-time only contribution to help us remain on your public airwaves and completely independent. The fight for voting rights, civil rights, and to save our planet continues. Please help us continue that fight independently over your public airwaves by stopping by bradblog.com/donate right now. Go ahead, do it right now. From Desi Doyen and myself, thank you.
You're listening to an encore presentation of the Bradcast.
Donald Trump sees the world a little differently than us. First of all, he doesn't know the first thing about service. He doesn't have time for it because he's too busy serving himself.
Again and again and again, Trump weakens our economy to strengthen his own hand. He mocks our laws. He sows chaos and division. And that's to say nothing of his record as president. He froze in the face of the COVID crisis. He drove our economy into the ground. And make no mistake, violent crime was up under Donald Trump. That's not even counting the crimes he committed.
Hello, Walt.
Welcome back. It's the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. As you may have heard by now, on Tuesday this week, the Democratic Party's now official 2024 presidential nominee, Kamala Harris, announced her vice presidential running mate selection. Minnesota's popular two-term governor, Tim Walz, was born in rural Nebraska, joined the Army National Guard at the age of 17, went on to serve for 24 years before retiring as a decorated command sergeant major, to go on to teach high school social studies for some 20 years in southern Minnesota, where he also became the school's football coach, who turned a 0-27 losing team into state champions, and then became the faculty advisor for the school's first gay-straight alliance coalition, before ultimately running for Congress in 2006 in his rural agricultural right-leaning congressional district, which had only elected one Democratic Congress member prior to Walz in more than 100 years. But he was elected and would go on to serve for 12 years over six terms in the U.S. House, during which he was the highest ranking enlisted soldier to ever serve in Congress and eventually the ranking member of the House Veterans Affairs Committee. And incidentally, the top sharpshooter in Congress year after year, because, yes, I guess that is a thing. He eventually left Congress to become Minnesota's governor in 2018, where his progressive record included signing laws to protect abortion rights, legalize recreational marijuana, restrict gun access, provide legal refuge to trans youths, enact laws expanding paid family leave, banning most non-compete agreements, providing universal school meals, that's breakfast and lunch, for all students regardless of family income in public schools. And he capped the price of insulin in Minnesota 3 years before President Biden did so nationally. All the while, he remained a great supporter of labor unions, the father of two children with his wife, Gwen, who has been a high school teacher for 29 years, all of which, if he was a fictional political character in a Netflix series, you might look at it, what the writers had done to establish this guy and his background, and think, yeah, they're kind of laying it on a little bit thick, aren't they? But as it turns out, Tim Walz is not a fictional character. He's actually a real one, believe it or not. Even as Americans are only now discovering years of various video clips of Walz in action on and off the job, which have gone viral over the past 24 hours, and who has seemingly offered a major shot of adrenaline to the Harris for President campaign over those hours, even though the campaign was already running on overdrive and a whole bunch of adrenaline, it seems, in the just over 2 weeks since it came into existence, following President Biden's last-minute decision to drop out of the race just over 3 months before the election to endorse his vice president for the top of the Democratic ticket. And in his first joint appearance as her VP selection on Tuesday, some of which you heard at the top of the segment there, Walz appeared with Kamala Harris in a packed arena in Philadelphia and took on both Donald Trump and his vice presidential running mate. And frankly, he just blew the lid off the joint.
Like all regular people I grew up with in the heartland, JD studied at Yale, had his career funded by Silicon Valley billionaires, and then wrote a bestseller trashing that community. Come on! That's not what middle America is. And I gotta tell you, I can't wait to debate the guy. That is, if he's willing to get off the couch and show up. So, you see what I did there?
Yeah, we see what you did there. And, of course, the rest of us are all just still left, you know, holding on for dear life to either keep up and or enjoy the ride. Joining us now for that ride and for some smart context and perspective yet again on all of this amid yet another unprecedented and heretofore unheard of, I think, week in American presidential politics are two of our old longtime friends and old school progressive bloggers who have, by the way, A, been right on just about everything over the past 20 years. So as punishment, you may not see them too often on CNN or MSNBC, much less Fox News. And B, they have been generously available to join us on a regular-ish basis of late to help us try and keep up with, much less make sense of, these extraordinary days. Heather Digby Parton, sometimes known as simply Digby, is the award-winning opinion columnist at Salon and longtime proprietor of Digby's Hullabaloo blog. Driftglass is, well, simply known as Driftglass, though sometimes as Mr. Electrico on Twitter and even just Bill at Home, where he produces the Professional Left podcast each week, rain or shine, from what he describes as flyover country, Illinois. They both join us once again today. Hey, welcome back to the broadcast, guys.
Glad to be here. Thanks.
So, my, how the political worm has turned over these past weeks from what was our grim coverage on this program just over 3 weeks ago, with the nation seemingly sliding over a cliff toward a catastrophic authoritarianism, authoritarian regime under a second Trump term, to wherever we have landed today with pre-election polls now, if you trust them, both nationally and in the so-called battleground states, continuing to surge in the direction of the Democrats now under the Harris-Walz ticket. As I noted on our show yesterday, I think it's a credit, frankly, to the discipline so far of Team Harris that her selection of Tim Walz did not leak out until she made the announcement on her own time on Thursday. But Heather Digby Parton, I will start with you. Your top line thoughts on the selection of Walz as VP?
I think it's great. I mean, I had been observing this, like, along with everybody else. And, you know, they all, I mean, the Democrats have a really deep bench, and, yeah, and they're very, very lucky to have this group of people who I think any of them could have stepped in, any of the ones on her list could have stepped in and been great on the stump, great in the campaign, and would have done a good job as vice president. You would feel confident that they knew what they were doing, unlike certain other people who are running for vice president currently. So I was, you know, I was pleased to see that. And I thought that, you know, there was a little bit of back and forth among the Democrats, you know, some unhappiness with Josh Shapiro and various people thinking, you know, having opinions, let's just put it that way. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, it seems to have been a very smooth sort of operation. And Tim Walz, I think, is just, I mean, he is the most lovable politician I've come across,
yes,
in a long time.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you something. I think that the country is ready for that. And the reason is, as I've been saying for a long time, and I've said it on this show and I've written it a bunch of times, one of the reasons why everybody's in such a bad mood and has been for so long is because of Donald Trump, because he just won't go away and he won't stop talking and he won't stop making everybody unhappy. And that includes the people on his side, as well as the people on our side. Everybody's unhappy. And so then you see this thing, this rollout of the announcement with Walz, and, you know, Harris, she just looks, you know, she's glowing, you know, she looks incredibly confident. She looks incredibly appealing. And her speech was really great. And then you've got this lovable dude come out and it's like, suddenly you kind of feel good a little bit about politics and feel like, well, maybe this thing that we've been going through for 8 long years, maybe we have some hope of coming out of it. And so, you know, for me, I think he's ended up being, you know, he said, you know, we're bringing the joy. And I think, yep, that's exactly what he does. And I think that was a very wise choice. I think people are hungry for it and ready for it.
Yeah, it is. It's the likability factor that it seems to me is what is making the difference here. And when he said, thank you for bringing the joy, I mean, I kind of applauded at that line here at home. Driftglass, your thoughts on the selection of Walls? And if you can think of anyone else who might have somehow had a better effect on the electoral chances for Kamala Harris and for the Democrats?
Well, I mean, he's Uncle Ted Lasso. I mean, he's coach, and he's positive, and he's happy, and he's joyful, and he's funny, and he has that Midwest farm and fleet dad energy just radiating off of him. And the deeper you dig into his background, the more you find out, oh my gosh, I know this guy. This is everybody's favorite uncle. Why didn't we get this sooner? Where was this? Why was this sitting on the shelf all this time? Yes. And you realize there's a lot of people in the Democratic Party like this who bring this kind of stuff to the table. It's just getting them to the front of the line sometimes is tricky. And, you know, the Trump campaign, I swear, thought they had this thing locked up. They're running, you know, smelly old Caligula, and their strategy is just shut up and sit down and go golfing and talk every now and then. If you just keep quiet, we'll ease you into the White House. And now they're completely on their back foot. They do not know what to do. They're completely freaked out. J.D. Vance was supposed to be Tim Walz. Mm-hmm. Tim Walz was built in a lab to look like the perfect Midwest candidate.
Well, sorry, man. It seems like if he was a character, you would say, no, nobody. I mean, he's just one thing after another. The deeper you dig on this guy,
I know,
the more you say it's impossible that this guy exists.
Last time I was on this wonderful program, I offered myself as vice president.
Yes, you did.
And
yes.
They rejected me roundly. I'll hold a grudge forever because I'm Irish. But the point being that he checks all my boxes. He's really good with words. Uh-huh. He knows how to give a speech. He's ready to, you know, rattle J.D. Vance like a Salvation Army tambourine. And he's smart, and he's fun, and he's happy. And he looks like he's happy to be there. And he's got these wild videos of him and his daughter doing cool dad stuff.
Yep.
And meanwhile, J.D. Vance is over there. I mean, I've heard it rumored that Trump is so disappointed in him, he's calling him Eric now, which is very sad. So, you know, this is not the campaign that they had geared up for. This is not the campaign they wanted to run. And they have no plan B. So I'm thrilled. Just, you know, the Midwestification of the Democratic Party, you know, I'm Mr. Flyover Country, is a great thing to watch because, you know, we've been out here the whole time, and I'm glad the rest of the country is discovering it.
Well, you say there are a lot of Democrats like this out there. Are there? Because, you know, New York's progressive Democratic Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez said in a statement on Tuesday, after the announcement, she called Walz, quote, an excellent decision, and said that Harris and Walz will, quote, govern effectively, inclusively, and boldly for the American people. That was AOC. And on the very same day, right-wing former Democratic senator turned independent, Joe Manchin of West Virginia, he said Walz, quote, will bring normality back to the most chaotic political environment most of us have ever seen, saying he could, quote, think of no one better than Governor Walz to bring our country closer together, calling him, quote, the real deal. Dogs and cats living together. It's mass hysteria. Democrats agreeing from AOC to Joe Manchin. What's going on here? How is that possible?
I mean, look at what took the stage. Josh Shapiro comes out and just kills it. And then we introduce Kamala Harris, who kills it. And then we introduce Tim Walz, who kills it. And it was like a joke. You know, it was like, you know, a so-and-so and so-and-so and so-and-so walk into a rally. And they look like America. They look like the people I know. They look like my country. And Tim Walz sounds like people I know at my church. Speaking of which, one of the new additions to Republicans for Kamala Harris is our former governor, Jim Edgar, who I know because he goes to my church. These really are the sort of the soccer dads, and they'll teach you how to whittle and how to put a worm on a hook guys that I know. And it's that's the thing about, frankly, party elites. They don't really seem to understand their own parties. Republicans certainly never dreamed that there was this you know, massive pile of bigots and imbeciles running their party. They apparently were completely shocked when Donald Trump took over. And the more people from the base start showing up in the Democratic Party, the more it's like, whoa, this is awesome. This is great. Yeah. It is.
Enough about the Midwest. Well, let's bring it back out to the coasts, which is with the real thing that matters here. Digby, I was wildly amused after the announcement of walls on Tuesday when I saw that the Trump campaign's initial response to it from the press secretary was quote, "It's no surprise that San Francisco liberal Kamala Harris wants West Coast wannabe Tim Walz as her running mate. Walz has spent his governorship trying to reshape Minnesota in the image of the Golden State. Walz is obsessed with spreading California's dangerously liberal agenda far and wide." So, Digby, as a fellow California resident, are you going to stand for those slurs, A? And more importantly, what does it tell you about the Trump Vance ability to actually push back against the selection of Walz, much less the, you know, the Harris-Walz ticket as a whole here with that kind of a response?
It's just, it's so stale and so, you know, just come on. I mean, we're still doing this, the San Francisco liberal thing. I mean, you can go back to 1980 and Gene Kirkpatrick, you know, saying and that kind of stuff. I mean, it's just like, come on. And or as Tim Walz would say, come on.
Come on.
Nobody's listening to that anymore. I mean, they could still try it. Nancy Pelosi is from San Francisco. Kamala Harris from San Francisco. They're both women, by the way. Ooh. And they're from San Francisco. Mm-hmm. But I loved Walz, who actually was asked about this. And his response is, well, he had never been to San Francisco until recently. Never once in his whole life. He's 60 years old. But he went recently and said, you know, it's such a beautiful city. And I walked around and, you know, I took a jog through the Presidio neighborhood of San Francisco. And it's so lovely. It's one of our great, you know, natural landmarks is San Francisco. And I thought, you know, that is such a generous and nice thing to say. You know, we don't get, you know, we get that from real people in California.
Yeah.
But from anybody in politics, like, you have to run from saying anything nice about San Francisco or L.A.
Did he say anything about, well, it was so nice in San Francisco, I see why J.D. Vance lived here for so many years?
He didn't, but he could have. And that is the truth. I mean, if there's one person who knows San Francisco, it's J.D. Vance, who was a venture capitalist in San Francisco for years. And basically, as Walz says on the stump, that J.D. Vance was sponsored by Silicon Valley venture capitalists, and then wrote a book that trashed the place he came from. Yep. And he said, we don't do that. You know, we don't do that here. And, you know, we don't do that in San Francisco and L.A. either. You know, that's just them. That's them being pigs, as, you know, they so often are.
Drifty, here was remarks from Walz in Philadelphia on Tuesday comparing the values that Kamala Harris that she grew up with in her middle class upbringing on the West Coast, in Oakland, which is might as well be San Francisco, with the values that Walz grew up with and governed the state of Minnesota with, and their plans to bring those values to bear while governing together in the White House.
I learned the art of compromise without compromising my values. And now, as governor of the great state of Minnesota, I bring those experiences to bear in tackling the challenges that are facing our great state. Minnesota's strength comes from our values, our commitment to working together, to seeing past our differences, to always being willing to lend a helping hand. Those are the same values I learned on the family farm and tried to instill in my students. I took it to Congress and to the state capitol, and now Vice President Harris and I are running to take those very values to the White House.
Now, Drifty, anyone who has followed your work, whether it's on your show, the Pro Left podcast, or on your blog, or particularly over at Twitter, knows that you can be absolutely brutal in attacking your perceived political opponents with effective and cruel cutting attacks. So an exercise here, if you will indulge me, Bill. If you did make a deal with the devil to join the other side, how would you even begin to mount an attack against a guy like that?
Well, if I got a contract to go to the other side, I would, of course, take the money and use all my powers and all my wiles to sabotage them from the inside. So first thing I would say is, you know, they're calling us weird. So what we need to do is get Stephen Miller out there dressed like a Nazi to rebut that on Fox News. I would remind them. And this is something that I watched poor Stuart Stevens just weeping over on social media.
Former,
these are his people. And,
former Republican.
Nice guy.
Yeah. Calling him out.
I've got his book. He's really one of the few really genuinely honest Never Trumpers I know of who just are like, yeah, it was us. It was a lie. I would try. I mean, this is, you know, this is speaking from someone who's, you know, from the land of Lincoln. Lincoln's buried two miles from here. Is I would try to remind the Republican Party in vain. I realize that's why you get the money up front, that they didn't used to be this way, that they didn't used to be monsters. They didn't used to be this horrible. I mean, I long for the day. My wife and I both long for the day when you could actually have a debate with a Republican that wasn't acrimonious and insane.
We used to have them on this show, believe it or not. But you can't, it's almost impossible to find any who are willing to, you know, just talk about actual issues, debate them vigorously, and not just, you know, make up lies and nonsense. So sadly, because we don't have them anymore here.
Because they're stuck. I mean, this is the pit they dug for themselves, and they've fallen into it, and they can't get out. Because the minute you start admitting there's something maybe wrong, a little bit weirdness around the edges, whatever, you're out. You're done.
Yeah.
You know, you're excommunicated from the cult. So I would appeal to that last guttering spark of humanity somewhere in their black soul and say, look, can't you at least remember back when we used to have conversations that were civil and we would disagree about things and one of us would lose and then we'd come back to the table in 2 years and we'd try again? And I would fail, but that's what I tried, because I can't think of anything else that they can do right now. Right now, all they're doing is running every old playbook they have. They're grabbing everything they can think of, dirty, filthy, commie, baby killing monsters, and flinging it up against the wall. They're attacking Tim Walz's military record, which is freaking hilarious. They're trying to swift boat him. I mean, it's just, and they're carping over the couch choke. You know, which is just kills me. Like, how dare you? What happened to the civility on the left? Making these kind of tasteless assaults with your so-called humor. You call yourself tolerant, liberal. And, you know, what are you going to do?
You know, I think you make an excellent point, though, because, and perhaps you have hit on the best way, because if they did that, if they said, okay, we're not going to be crazy, we're actually going to debate the issues. You know, there's a lot of people out there who are Republicans, and they really, really, really want to be Republican. They really want to vote for a Republican, but some of them just cannot. But if you give them even the slightest thing where you know, where they can say, look, well, we vigorously debate these topics. We disagree with the Democrats. We would like to see it this way instead of that way. You know, I think you could see a lot of those Republicans actually come home, and in a country where, you know, this election, no matter how it goes for either side, is probably going to be decided by about, you know, 1 or 2 or 3% either way. That could really make a lot of difference for the Republicans. Here's one for you, Heather. This is, I think it speaks for itself.
In Minnesota, we respect our neighbors and their personal choices that they make. Even if we wouldn't make the same choice for ourselves, there's a golden rule. Mind your own damn business.
How do you even take that on, Heather? And with that in mind, where do you put the odds that that Trump will actually debate Kamala Harris and or allow J.D. Vance to debate Tim Walz at this point?
Well, I mean, I don't know how you take that on, because the interesting thing is, for anybody who was a conservative before, you know, Trump came along.
An actual conservative.
One that the old-fashioned movement conservatism, which I was not a fan of, but I understood it.
You mean the ones that wanted people to mind their own damn business? That kind of conservative?
That libertarian strain of the live and let live thing.
Yeah, yeah.
For them, this has got to be very disconcerting. I mean, that must be caused tremendous dissonance to hear this Democrat say it and say it with so much backing him up. I mean, he said that, you know, in a way that really resonates with someone like me, because I've always felt that the idea of freedom and, you know, whatever American ideals we have and mm-hmm. pluralism and all the rest that I grew up with were residing in the Democratic Party, but we weren't allowed to say that for some reason. So here he's coming. He's not only said that, he also said, you know, he transformed the idea of socialism, which they're tagging him with, to neighborliness. You know, we look out for one another. It's my neighbor over here, and we may not agree, but I'm going to defend his right to say it, to say and think whatever he wants. Those are things that I've always held dear, but they sort of took it, you know, for themselves for years and years, and now they don't have it anymore. And I don't know how that's going down among certain parts of the Republicans. I think the people you're talking about, Brad, the ones who are, you know, I'm a Republican, it's my identity, I want to be a Republican, mm-hmm. but they're finding this weird version of it with Donald Trump. And now J.D. Vance, he's taken it to a whole new level of weirdness and kind of, what is this? what have we become? And I think that is going to be a very interesting thing, because a lot of what Waltz is doing is kind of co-opting a certain all-American value system that we used to kind of have in common, even if we interpreted it differently. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what those Republican people are going to do. I'm not expecting them to vote for Kamala Harris, but I'm thinking maybe some of them may be persuaded, and certainly among the independents, which the latest polling is showing are moving very quickly away from the Republicans. And they may be impressed by what you see in Waltz and Harris, too, who's saying the same thing.
You know, for Donald Trump, this is not just political. This is existential for him. And I think people forget that, you know, if he loses on November 5 and if, you know, Democrats can assure that he retains that loss through January 6 and beyond, you know, there's a very good chance that he will be going to jail, to prison. So it's, you know, much more than political for him. It is existential, it seems to me. Is it conceivable that Trump might, you know, at this point, dump J.D. Vance between now and Election Day in sort of a panic to try and do anything to save himself?
Well, I don't know if he's going to dump him. He says he won't. I mean, I think he's capable of doing anything.
If he says it, but, then I would take that to the bank.
Well, then, you know, yeah. I mean, his word is like oak, right?
Yes.
I mean, this is
That's
who
right.
he is.
Right.
But I will say one thing about this is that he is losing it on a level that we have not yet seen before. And mm-hmm. I'm not kidding. And mm-hmm. we've seen him lose it before. He mm-hmm. did a post on his social media on, I guess it was Tuesday night,
yep.
that was completely off the wall, in which he suggested that Joe Biden was going to crash the Democratic National Convention and try to take back the nomination, beginning with challenging him to another debate.
Yep.
He says he feels that he made a historically tragic mistake by handing over the U.S. presidency, a coup, to the people in the world he most hates, and he wants it back now. Now, apparently, the people in the world he most hates must be Kamala Harris.
Yeah.
And Tim Walz.
That would be no. He called her Kamabla. And
Kamabla,
he also hates
that's his new name for
Barack
her.
Hussein Obama, crazy Nancy Pelosi, shifty Adam Schiff, crying Chuck Schumer, and others on the lunatic left. That's apparently who Joe
Who's
Biden
behind all this. Yeah,
hates. Yeah,
it was nuts. And I'm looking at this and reading this thing and just thinking, okay, somebody's going to have to bring in the guys in the white suits, the rubber room. There is something really crazy. I mean, that's nuts. He said, who's he talking to? I mean, what are they really? I mean, of course it's not going to happen, but get this. So the next day, J.D. Vance says, hold my beer. And he offers Kamala Harris. He says, or Kamala Harris, he says, if she'd like to do a debate with me on August 13th, I'll do it. I don't think she wants to anymore because, one, she probably doesn't even know that she's going to be the Democratic nominee. And, two, we don't know who the vice presidential nominee is going to be either.
What? Wait, what? He said this when?
Yes.
He wants to have Kamala Harris debate him as originally scheduled because, listen, it's only August. They are running out of material.
But where is, yes. What's it?
Yeah.
So he's claiming that we don't really know if Kamala will be the nominee.
That's
or
what he
Walls
says. And we don't know who the vice presidential nominee is going to be either. Get this. He's got a lot of skeletons that are coming out of the closet today. And we'll see if the Democrats pull a bait and switch on Tim Walz or Kamala Harris, just like they did with Joe Biden. But look, if Kamala Harris wants to honor her commitment and debate on August 13th, let's do it. I'm all game. These people are certifiable. I mean, this is just Looney Tunes stuff. Who's this for and what's it supposed to do? I don't understand. Are they trying to get Democrats to think that this is going to happen or...
I think they're trying to get their MAGA base, who they know will not check any of this stuff. It'll just keep them all spun up and full of anxiety. Don't you think, Bill?
Well,
oh, yeah. Vance kept Fancy Pants Vance, as I call him, kept his audience of five people at his rally waiting today while he stalked Kamala Harris's plane.
Yeah.
What?
He went stomping across the tarmac like a weirdo and just wanted to sniff the seats or something. I don't know what the hell his problem was, but he decided, I'm going to walk over there and make it a press event. Meanwhile, all nine people that are waiting around for him to talk crazy are just sweating to death in the hot sun. That's a tarmac version of the I will hover around Hillary making big loud noises that Donald Trump tried.
Yeah.
They have nothing else. They have literally nothing else to do. So everything in their playbook is now gone. Everything they plan to do is now dead. So they're just making this crap up as they go along, and they're trusting their instincts, which are, you know, catastrophic.
Well, that was one of my questions was, you know, because one of the hallmarks of Trump's campaigns in both 2016 and 2020, and even for much of 24, has been to own the media space, to dominate the news and the media culture over the last going on 3 weeks or so now, it seems to me he has lost that. He's lost that dominant position in the race. So, Bill, I'm wondering if you think I'm right about that. And if so, what should we fear that he might do at this point to try to win it back?
I think we'd sort of lean into the joy of watching them panic. And I don't think there is anything he can do to win it. I mean, Republicans have lots of friends in the media, and there's lots of people who are going to say, well, you know, what about Tim Walz's record? What about this? What about that? Their raptors are testing the fences. They're trying to find a way into the news cycle again. And maybe they'll hit on something. I don't know. I know that on my bingo card, Chuck Schumer dunking on Eric Erickson was not anything I anticipated for 1,000 years. But Eric Erickson popped onto social media, and I don't know if you know this, and complained, there's no room for Jews at the top of the Democratic Party.
Longtime right wing, just for people who don't know, Eric Erickson, longtime right wing blogger. Longtime
CNN contributor once upon a time. He was on magazine cover like Mr. Conservative, one of the most influential influencers. The man's so nice they named him twice. And Chuck Schumer came back with, that's news to me, and just dropped him like a shot. Dropped him like, and they're flinging everything they've got.
And
I just think it's failing. And the more they fail, the more they panic. And the more they panic, the more mistakes they make. And there's nobody inside the campaign who has the off button, who can turn Trump off and say, we got to sit down and think this through because none of this is working and we're losing really bad. And nobody's willing to tell.
Get this. Trump is doing one campaign event this week.
Yes.
In Montana.
Good God.
What?
You know?
The battleground state of Montana, of course.
Well, I think part of that might be, as Heather, you have mentioned in previous shows, that Republicans may not feel like they have to work that hard because they plan to suppress the vote and then contest the vote. So that may be part of that.
Did So it seems to me Kamala is kind of running a flawless campaign for the past 3 weeks or so. I suspect that will change, but it brings me to sort of two points here. One is, can this be sustained? Can she, can the Democrats, can he sustain this for now about 90 days? And I loved, again, Tim Walz's line, 90 days, damn, that's easy. We can, you know, sleep when we die. But can they actually maintain this, you know, continue to build on the polls and so forth in those 90 days? And actually, I'll hold my follow up for after your thoughts, Heather.
Well, yes, I think they can. We're heading into the Democratic convention, which I think a lot of people are going to watch. There'll be a big love fest for Joe Biden, because you can feel that in these in the rallies that they've been holding whenever they mention Biden and do a big, you know, kind of commemoration, I guess, of him. The crowd really gets excited. So that's going to be, I think they're going to come out of that convention and they'll have probably, you know, some room going out of it to sustain this. And then, you know, we're in this, in the home stretch when people usually get excited. So this, this truncated, you know, process that we have, I think works really well for the Democrats. I think that is really helpful to them because they're going to be able to go and just, you know, keep pushing and pushing and pushing. And the Democrats are excited. The other side has to really boost it up. And they thought they were going to get this from the assassination attempt and then the big, you know, the RNC, which was the worst convention I've ever seen in my life. And they got nothing out of that. Nothing. They got no bounce.
No,
nothing.
No.
So they're kind of starting from the ground up to build some excitement. And, you know, they do have that. I mean, they've got the MAGA people that love them, but they're not getting any of this. And like we just said, Trump's not campaigning. He's not bothering. And I think Desi may be right on that. Rachel Maddow had a big thing this week about this, about how their real, you know, process that they're working toward. And Trump has said this outright, is to suppress the vote, and then they've got these people salted throughout these battleground states with with Republicans in the electoral offices that will allow them to contest the vote afterwards, and then theoretically anyway send suspend or reject the actual vote count and send a different electoral count to the House.
Yeah.
And go, yeah, so we'll see, but you know, first things first, just win the election and we'll deal with the rest of their craziness.
I guess we will. Let me.
What else can we do?
we can let everyone know about that. We can let everyone know about their plans. Yeah. And it was a great article in Rolling Stone about that and how, you know, we're seeing officials around the country who are refusing to certify elections as sort of a test moving forward to what could be the template to cause to wreak havoc come November. So giving heads up about that, helping people understand that. And of course, as I've been telling people, get out and vote in your primaries. Make sure you're still registered as you think you are. Check your registration and all of that. So there are proactive things we can do. That said, I've got to get out, so I'm going to give you about 30 seconds each here. But why do you think, let me start with Bill, that first the Kamala Harris campaign and now the Harris-Walz campaign seems to have struck such a chord with the American people, unlike anything that, you know, we have seen in this country, arguably since, you know, Barack Obama's first run in 2008. And or are we just, you know, sort of experiencing, well, as former Fed Chair Alan Greenspan might call it, irrational exuberance about all of this?
People like them. People like Kamala Harris. People like Tim Walz. He seems like a fun guy. She seems like a really nice person. They're not offensive. They seem, again, joyful. They're happy to be there. They talk about neighbors. They talk about helping each other. This is straight out of, you know, Methodist ministries. This is really basic stuff. And you just can't kind of fake likability. And people really despise Donald Trump. And J.D. Vance is a creepy weirdo. And there's just no way you can paper over that. So there'll be a lot of issues and back and forth and fighting and bark, bark, bark. But, you know, and just forget about what they're talking about on social media. The people who are screaming those things are not talking to anybody. They're trying to keep the base intact because that's all they have. They're just trying to hang on to the voters they have because those are the only voters who are going to vote for them. They're not going after any new people. Anybody hovering in that weird undecided area, those are the people that are taking a second and third look at the Democrats going, these seem like really nice people and they seem really smart and they seem likable. And Trump just creeps me out. So, yeah, I'll go with these guys. And that's all you will need to win if the votes are counted properly. If they're not, I understand the vice president of the United States is allowed to make decisions on that line and decide who wins. And guess who the vice president of the United States is currently? So,
Heather, is that it? Is that the secret sauce? It's as simple as that. These are likable people, and people like to vote for people that they like, and that's it?
I think that's the main thing. I totally agree with that. And I also just think there was, as I said earlier, this pent-up desire to get past this, the doldrums, the depression that we've been in for 8 years. With, you know, Donald Trump has been a real, he has been such a negative influence on our culture, and people get tired of that. And, you know, as the economy has improved, and, you know, nothing's perfect, and yeah, we had some bumps in the stock market this week and whatever, but people, I think, are starting to feel a little bit better. And along comes this ticket, and they look like they're the future. They're something, they're leaving this ugliness behind. We had COVID, we had Trump, we had all this. You know, maybe we're coming out of that, you know, that sense, and maybe that's where the, why the energy is there. It's kind of, it's part relief, if nothing else. So I think, you know, I'm hopeful that the joy campaign is going to sustain, and people are going to get on that train, because I think we're way overdue for it.
Okay. Well, you people are, you know, you're supposed to be Democrats. I don't know how you're going to maintain this joy for that long. So just don't get too excited
well,
about
not
it.
Not with you around, we won't be able to.
You're welcome. Thanks, guys. Heather Digby Parton can be found at Salon.com and at, of course, digbysblog.net, as well as on the site still known as Twitter at Digby56. You can find our friend Driftglass each and every week producing his pro-left podcast. You can download it via proleftpod.com. His blog is driftglass.blogspot.com. And just to confuse us all over on the Twitters, he calls himself Mr. _ Electrico. Thank you, guys. A delight speaking with you, as always, or I should say as it has been lately. We'll see how things go in the weeks ahead. Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Happy days are here again.
Not for long. Not for long. Okay, gotta get out. Thanks also to our producer, Desi Doyen, to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's program or any other we've ever done since the beginning of time, feel free to download it for free, no paywall, at bradblog.com. Thanks to those of you who do hit the donate button there to help us stay on your public airwaves with a one-time donation, or better yet, a recurring donation of any amount you can afford. You can go straight to bradblog.com/donate. Drop me email. I am bradcast@bradblog.com, and you'll find me on the Facebook's mastodons and sites still known as Twitter at TheBradBlog. We will see you at all of the above. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
Let us sing a song of cheer again. Happy days are here again. All together, shout it now.